Hi, everybody. This is Pete Havlin. Welcome to the Guest Glue and Guardrails, the cultural leadership and careers spot in podcasting. I'm the president of Fireproof Leadership, my workplace culture and leadership training, consulting, and speaking company. And I'm also the author of The Arsonist in the Office. Go on to Amazon or my website at arsonistintheoffice.com if you want to get a copy. If you want to connect with me or my guest coming up, Julie Noonan, go to the show notes. You'll find all information right there. And as we do with every show, I want to bring on guests who have a story to tell, a message to send that can help you, make you smarter in your career, in your life, to avoid those pitfalls, bumping into those guardrails that I talk about, those things that are going to help you get through and have a successful career. Our guest for today is Julie Noonan. She is an executive coach. She's a change management strategist. I'm going to have her talk about all the different and wonderful things she does. But bottom line, she helps people. She helps people in some of the most vulnerable parts of their lives that, frankly, they may not have seen coming. But she helps them, once they're there, get through it, get to the other side of it. And we're going to also talk today about when you hit those points in your career, when suddenly you're making a bunch of money, you have a cool office, you've got some status, and you find yourself thinking, wait a second, I'm on the chopping block. What do you do? And maybe what those steps were even beforehand that you should have thought about to make sure you're not on the chopping block, or at least lower the risk of you being the turkey at Thanksgiving dinner. So, Julie, I want to welcome you to Guest Glue and Guardrails. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Pete. I really appreciate it.
We are going to talk today about all sorts of things. I sent you a long laundry list, but you are an accomplished coach. You've got a national presence. You're working with people from executives to other rungs of the company. But tell me about who you are, what you do, because you're going to be talking about that best.
Okay, great. Well, Pete, first of all, I'm a boomer, and I'm looking to make a positive impact on business leadership over the next 10 years of my career. I've always been drawn to stories. And I actually have a master's degree in English literature, which is strange. Once I decided that I didn't want to become an English professor and eat macaroni and cheese and hot dogs for another 5 years to get my degree.
My daughter is listening to this show right now. She does a lot in liberal arts and writing, and I'm going to have her listen to you because this is going to give her direction on football.
Well, this was obviously a long time ago, but when I decided to forego the PhD, I fell into the world of instructional design and learning development, leadership development. And what I realized as I was going through this is, why do I like this so much? Why do I like studying these people and helping them figure out where they are in the vast universe of a corporation? And what I figured out was the greatest works of art in novels really is just a study of how people interact with each other, and throw in a good plot, throw in a good crisis point. And there's your stress, there's your change, and how do they react? And so I had been studying human behavior via English literature for many years. So it came naturally to me to merge into change management at that point in my career. And ever since then, I've been doing change management consulting and branched off into executive coaching when 3 years ago during COVID, I myself was let go at the age of 57 years old. And I faced the very real age discrimination. I faced feeling useless and hopeless, and that my time had come. And I said to myself, no way, I've got a lot more to give. And I think that's what most of the boomers that I work with actually feel like, is we're not done. I don't think some of us will ever be done until we die. So
that's right. That's right. Absolutely. And what I love about what you're doing is you faced a problem and you solved it. And now you're solving it for everybody else. I consider myself part of that club. Figuring things out, having a punch thrown at you, and then getting up off the mat and fighting back and helping others. We're in an interesting workplace these days, interesting time. We have, is it four generations in the workplace right now? Is that right?
Four, sometimes five.
four, sometimes five. So we've got the Zers up to 26 years of age.
Yes.
We've got the Millennials from that 26 up to about 40 or so. Got the Xers. I'm a proud Xer, or I was going to say an Xer by choice. That makes no sense. But an Xer up to 58 years old. And we've got the Boomers rounding it out with the Traditionalists from 59 on up. So tell me what your average client is feeling like, their demographic looks like, what their level of position is when they're coming to Julie saying, I just got hit hard. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know what you do, but help me out. Explain what happened, and then where do we go from here? What's that initial step when talking to you, calling Julie Noonan, and you coming in to triage their situation?
Most of my clients are either feeling like they're becoming obsolete because they have a hard time understanding the younger generations and what their values are. They have reached the pinnacle of their careers. They have all of the prestige and power that they need. They feel like that they're starting to feel a little nudged out of some of the bigger initiatives. They feel like that they really do want to prepare for retirement, although they're redefining what that actually means, because they're not really thinking about retirement as traditionally at 65, I'm going to leave my job at this particular company and I'm going to go off and play golf the rest of my life. That's not how they're thinking about retirement. As a matter of fact, they don't see 65 as the threshold anymore. Most of them see 67, 70, never.
That's right.
They feel like that I don't feel any different. As long as I can keep up with the technology changes, with the new demographics that I'm dealing with, both in my customer population, but also within my company, and understand how to work well with them, I feel like that I can continue to help my company mitigate risk, because I've been there, done that a lot. I have a lot of experience that you just can't replace with skills building.
How many of your clients come to you percentage-wise, okay, the hit was just put out on me, versus, hey, Julie, I'm approaching an age where I'm vulnerable and I'd like your advice on how I can protect myself against that. What's the split?
I think the split is about 30%. I see the hit coming, and 70%. I don't want the hit to come.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in charge of my career my whole life. So I'm taking my next step, and here's what I think I want to do. I just need a thought partner to go through it with me.
Good stuff.
Right.
So let's walk through those two scenarios. As I've thrown out the mafia analogy there, but okay, those people that are coming to you that didn't see it coming, and now they're looking at what's happened to them. They're worried about what next. What do you say? What are the few steps that you walk them through? And let's also talk about the prevention, that aspirin every day. What are those things for both that person that got knocked down and is coming back, but also for that person that I'd say even, well, you're going to tell me the age. When's that age going to be of when somebody needs to start looking out for it? And then what should they be thinking about? So let me toss all of that in your lap and do with it what you will. But you've got those two types of people coming in. What do they need to be thinking about on both sides?
Okay. So my advice to both groups at the very beginning is don't panic. Worst thing you can do is panic. And start making moves that are not going to make sense either to you or to anyone else watching you go through this. Yep. If you have been laid off and it has been a shock, the first thing that I always advise people is to sit back, take a breath, and let's think about values. Let's think about what is important to me. What is important to me now and what is important to me going forward? And look at this not as a condemnation of who they were or that they had done something wrong. Layoffs happen all the time to all kinds of people. I think the boomer generation, because we, and I'm generalizing here, and that's really not what I like to do, but generally speaking, our generation was brought up to very closely identify with what we do, with our job, with our contribution to our society, whatever. And when that gets taken away by no fault of ours, we internalize that as being thrown away or being not good enough or not worthy. So a lot of what I wind up doing with people is going back to, let's talk about what you're passionate about. Let's talk about what you love to do. And let's look at this as an opportunity to go do it. Let's look at this as, and it really doesn't matter, or it, your happiness no longer depends on what you do at a company. Your happiness depends on how you choose to move forward in your life and what you decide to do with it. Financial considerations obviously play a huge role. And certainly if someone needs coaching on where can they go to find another position, a new position, how can they network, I'm certainly there for that. But what I like to do is to get them to stop and think about and divorce themselves from a job. So here's me. Here's a set of skills that I bring. Here's the value that I bring to a company or to my customer, ultimately. And if I want to continue to bring that value, I need to pick out who am I going to give that value to and how can I get paid for it?
Makes absolute sense. And I posted very similar things on LinkedIn last week. I called it the battle of woe is me versus whoa, it's me.
Yeah.
So because there's that stuff that, you know, at times you face stuff in life with, there's nothing you should have told you, you should have seen that coming. But sometimes in life, there's those moments, those trends, those behaviors, the signals that you should have been paying attention to, maybe ignored, maybe didn't want to see. What are those things on the side of things people can do to make sure that they're lowering their risk of becoming one of the people? Because, and I hate to say it, I've got lots of friends, all of them great workers, but some folks over 50 go, others don't. Sometimes it's luck of the draw, but sometimes it's things where, you know what, there's probably a few things we could have done to help ourselves. What are some of those things that worker that's hitting the wrong age for that we're talking about today? What can they be doing to minimize their risk if they help themselves not end up on the wrong side of these decisions?
The number one thing is to watch your attitude as far as, are you someone who automatically discounts anything that is new? That is a huge red flag, because the bottom line is no one in this corporate environment has the luxury of immediately discounting anything new. Everything new needs to be looked at with some objectivity and some openness to see if it's something that will help our customers or help our company, or is it something that we just need to watch for a little while, but I need to know enough about it to know to be able to speak intelligently about it. And if it is something that is going to be good for the company, or we think it might be, go get some learning about it. Pay attention to it. ChatGPT is a great example. The people that I know in the boomer population that I work with who look at it with curiosity, they don't look at it, oh, I'm all on board and I'm going to go whatever. And they also don't look at it as, oh, this is another passing fad. They look at it and go, oh, this is interesting. Let me check this out. Let me give it a shot. Let me see what it really is about. Let me experience it myself. And then
they
take
advantage of it.
Decisions about that. So it's remaining open, and it's also acknowledging that your skill set is only, or your experience and your skill set is only as good as what you personally have been through.
Great points. So when we're talking
and other learning that you haven't been through,
great stuff. So when we're talking new, what we're talking new technology, we're talking three or four generations that are in the workforce together. So understanding, like you said, attitude. What other new things do these folks in that risk area, what other new stuff do they need to be looking at in terms of how they, what else is new out there that they need to be thinking about? Is it even down to fitness? Is it down to even those little things of fitting in with the rest of the group anymore? Not that you have to go and watch all the same TV shows or listen to the same music, but is it cultural? Is it showing up at some of those places of not being the person that's perceived as, here's the, and I love the term because in a lot of organizations it's given with respect, you know, you're the OG, who knows the institutional history, which is often perceived very well. I look at one guy, he's on the Miami Heat basketball team. He is 42 years old, still playing in the NBA. Adonis Haslam is his name, and they call him the OG, and everybody loves having him around. But like, as you say, if you're the OG who is the curmudgeon that doesn't want to talk to anybody and the rest of the office is new, you may have a problem. What other things are in that area of new do employees need to be thinking about?
I think being open to the fact that the generations behind the boomers work to live. They don't live to work. They're not tied specifically to what they do in their jobs. They're a lot more flexible that way. And again, this is generally speaking.
Managers are having problems with this.
Correct. I think the business models, marketing, social media has absolutely changed the game for how to promote and how to sell in your company. It's absolutely changed the game. So if you are not familiar with the power of social media marketing, if you're not familiar with what an influencer can do for your company, for instance, if you're not familiar with the trends, the buying trends of the demographics below you, then if you're selling product to those demographics, you're not going to be around long because you're not clued in to what they need and what they want. One of my clients actually said to me, my company uses me for my gray hair. He's the OG, but they know how to use him as the OG. They use his experience with, we've tried this kind of a thing before. Maybe things have changed and it'll work now, but it didn't work then. And here's what we ran into. So they can do quick risk assessment. So where you as a person in the company that is at that point, another way that you can show that you're very, very valuable is to help with immediate risk assessment, to help with the innovation that some of the younger project teams are coming up with, to help them innovate more quickly because you can help them eliminate some of the things that you know haven't worked in the past. So that's number one. Number two, you can learn a little bit more about the success metrics with marketing. What are the new metrics that I need to be paying attention to? So for instance, hits or pass-throughs or time on site or people who fill their carts and then leave them there. That's a metric. Anyway, get more familiar with the kinds of metrics that show you that your company is selling well.
And not just leave it to the young people that know all that techie stuff.
Right. But have them literally mentor them and have them explain to you how they're analyzing and how they're reading those metrics and see if your perspective can add something to that conversation. That's why I partner, a lot of times I'll partner the younger generation employees with the older generation employees and do reverse mentoring. So they mentor each other. And that is an amazing situation to have someone go through, because we start off not with what they have agreements about. We start off with, what are your values? I actually do a values assessment with both of them. And we start with, what's important to both of you? And 9 times out of 10, we find a lot more in common than we do not in common.
Yeah. Is it a case in those types of mashups that there's been disagreement before, or just that they don't talk because they don't think they have anything in common?
It's a bit of both, actually. Sometimes there's an intervention that needs to happen, either with the older person or the younger person, or many times it is, I have a high performer, but this high performer is technically brilliant, has zero clue about how to lead people. So I'll put them with a great leader. And then the great leader is kind of sensing that maybe they're getting a little obsolete, and the younger person can share with them the changes that have happened in the world, as well as in technology, as well as in the business that they are in together, so that between the two of them, they're both learning.
So you're doing work with corporations, that change management part that you talked about, you're helping save some of these relationships, brought in to kind of triage it, identify it, and say, all right, what we've got here is some generational stuff going on. You folks are talking past each other. Let's come together and find some common ground.
Mm-hmm.
How many companies are, vague question here, but are a lot of companies doing this? Do they understand the problem, or are they just waiting for this generational stuff to shake itself out? Are you finding that corporate America and the world understands that there's a lot of fissures right now and a lot of productivity being lost, or are they getting smart about it?
Oh, that's a hard question to answer. Obviously, I don't have a global view. You know, sure. I haven't done any research around this. I would say that the generational issues came up and were very obvious for the largest companies way back in the 90s. And they began to put in internal systems to help mediate that. COVID accelerated a lot of the generational differences that were happening already. The changes that the younger generations were imposing or were bringing with them into the workforce were happening gradually. DE&I was happening gradually. Flexible work was happening gradually. COVID ripped the Band-Aid off. So, you know, a lot of what they were already bringing into the corporate world had to happen pretty much overnight. And I'm speaking obviously about remote work, hybrid teams, the DE&I, the mental health and stress relief. Heck, Two decades ago, when I was in the banking world, I would have slit my wrist rather than say, oh, I'm having a stress day.
Yeah.
Now it's more accepted that I really am, you know, overwhelmed, I'm stressed, I need to take a day. What nirvana would be in my mind is that we decouple time from value, that we decouple. You have to be at a place for 40 hours a week. Who made up 40 hours a week anyway?
It right? just doesn't make sense to people anymore. So here I am talking about my daughter again, and I will know if she is listening to my podcast and make this comment. But she was 19. She's going to be doing a full-time internship coming up in the fall. And she's kind of wrapping her head around working an 8-hour day. She hasn't quite gotten there yet because she hasn't had to do it. And for me, that was exactly what my dad did. Heck, my dad had his own business, so he would work 12, 14 hours, not think twice about it. Same thing.
Right.
But this generation, very different, that's coming in. It makes me think about a question then, and that is this. Okay, you're brought in to help that relationship between a boomer or an Xer and their Generation Z employee. So you got a full day engagement with them. You're talking with both of them for a couple hours, and then you get together and you've got both of them in the room. They're sitting across from you. And what are those things that essentially you're almost like a marriage counselor at this point? If you're in that scenario and you're thinking, all right, Xer boomer manager, here's the three things you need to understand about the Zers and why you need to arms with them and become a team. And Zers, what are those? Here's those three things you need to understand about your leader. How do you bring them together? And what are those big things that, frankly, folks on both ends of that spectrum need to understand about each other?
Number one, they both need to understand that they're dealing with stereotypes. And really, what I advise is pay attention to the person. Pay attention to how does that person act. Don't assume, don't project the stereotype onto that person. Now, where you have a disagreement, let's say the thing that I hear the most about is Gen Z not wanting to work. Well, let's define work. Let's define what is it that needs to happen. Let's define that work. Okay. So once they both agree, this is the job that has to be done. Then what are the non-negotiables about how this job needs to get done? Because that's usually where the problem lies, is the how. Mm-hmm. Once we get the what defined, then the how. Okay, so here's where the boomer may say that you need to be in the office, 5 days a week, 8 to 5 to get this thing done. Look at the Gen Z. How would you get this done? What is the ultimate way that you could get the same thing done, same outcome? How would you do it? And then when they say, well, I can work on the research part and putting my presentation together at home, it's more quiet, I'm more productive, I can get it done in less time. You look over at the boomer, is that acceptable? Do they have to be in the office to do those pieces? Once you get the boomer to say no, but they need to be around because they need to be available because the project team might need to call them on spur of the moment to get a question answered. Okay. Do they have to be in the office to have that happen? Or can they take a phone call or a chat message or an email? Okay. Yeah. So we literally talk through, and then what it really typically boils down to is a value mismatch.
So this is really, it starts out with a discussion with a couple of employees that are having a disagreement. But what you're talking about is really the need for companies that, if this whole five generations thing is going to work, companies need to re-engineer their whole thinking process.
Yes.
Because, and I'm not blaming just the Zers on this, something's going to break if something doesn't give in terms of flexibility. Is that kind of where we're going with that?
Absolutely. If the company is to be successful long-term, those Zers or the Gen Zs and the Xers and the millennials all need to understand what that looks like for them.
And that middle ground is middle ground is the productivity. Productivity is the bottom line.
We're gone. My whole point is, while we're still there, let's make sure that they're set up for success. That's what great leaders do. Set other people up for success.
Yeah. One of the things I've heard from this, and my reason for doing this show is to both help individuals as well as organizations, but I want folks to understand what they just heard and just underline it even more with all your great points. And that is, this isn't going to change. The problems are going to get larger because some employees are exiting, more are coming in, and that those that are coming in are certainly on the side of Generation Z in terms of the numbers. So companies, you got to get this part right.
Well, the funny thing is, it's interesting to me that every generation doesn't realize we built what we built according to what we wanted.
That's right.
It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It was what we wanted. And so the next generation is going to build what they want. Ultimately, what we all want is a successful company that can pay its employees well, contribute to the world, contribute to its customers, and be successful.
And there's frankly, and it's not said enough in a lot of circles, and I talk about servant leadership a lot to different organizations.
Yeah.
And it's that model is a little bit of more work on the front end, meaning you're going to burn through some shoe leather around talking to people, building a culture, values, the expectations, the relationships. But the end game that comes and just lining it up perfectly with what you're saying about productivity versus, you know, hours and excruciating minutes of butts in seats comes down to, look, if all you have to worry about is, did they get it done? Did they do it the right way with the right values and on time? That's much easier than the, okay, it's 4:48 right now. Did somebody leave 12 minutes early? Those kind of things, just suck up your time. And for that average manager that's gone down that path, where's the upside in worrying about that? Just look at productivity and quality and leave it at that. I couldn't agree with you more. Julia, we've talked about those people that are surprised when they lose that job. They need to think about plan B, maybe a plan C, but at the very least, have that plan B in mind. What should they be thinking about right now in terms of protecting themselves, their finances? What should those people at, let's call it 40, be doing right now to plan?
Oh, I have, I've always had the opinion, and this is just my personal experience growing up with rugs continually being pulled out from under me and having to, you know, take care of myself and my family. I always have a plan B and C. I always have alternative ways to make a living, alternative things that I like to do. I think networking, number one, the more people you know, the more people you have a relationship with and genuine relationships with, the more stable you can be, because those people become part of your support system. Whether they have a job for you or not, whether they, you know, whatever, they can be the people that you rely on if you have to institute a plan B. So that's number one. From a financial perspective, obviously, not frugal with your money, but spend your money wisely and put away some for the future. I mean, I'm a traditionalist like that, but don't live for your retirement either. Don't wait to live until you're 60 something and you can walk out of the corporate door and live on Social Security. Don't do that, because the bottom line is you need to be living in the moment every single day. And sometimes you have to wait on some of the things you want. I just bought a fifth wheel RV last weekend. It was a 7-year dream of mine. And we purchased it. We're going to actually move into it in the fall, and that's, we're going to travel the United States while we're both still working. So, you know, have a dream, have several dreams, and look for opportunities to make your short-term dreams come true along the way. Don't wait to live until you're in retirement.
Yeah.
Also, don't count on any given company for your whole life. That's not very realistic. And I think Gen Z, the younger generations know this. They've watched their parents be laid off multiple times. I myself have been laid off 4 times in my career, and none of them my fault. You know, none of them, it was never a termination. It was just, we have to cut, your job is going away, kind of a thing. So, you know, be prepared for that.
And is that problem growing worse, or is it just worse because we know it's happened to us and we're more personal? But is that growing every year with just the
I think it is
insecurity because, of the world?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Changes happen on a dime. You know, who thought that SVB was going to go belly up last week? And now the ripple effect of that on the economy in the whole banking sector.
Yeah.
You know, one thing can switch and all of a sudden, you know, thousands of people can be out of a job.
Yeah.
Always have your resume updated. Post on LinkedIn. Have some content out there so that people know who you are. Don't be invisible. Network.
How much can that social media presence help somebody? Because it's both a skill as well as a business card. Is that something where, and I know some people are more excited about posting than others. Obviously, neither of us are in the camp of any fear on getting our names out there, and that's a good, smart thing. But should they have a strategy? I mean, should they be getting out there regularly and building those connections and being seen, taking thought leadership positions on? Is that part of the equation?
Absolutely. I think not being on social media now is damaging.
Backdoor sign of if you're older and not on social media, it almost confirms a stereotype, doesn't it?
Well, the funny thing is, if it's almost like if you still have a secretary, there might be an issue there. If you don't use email, if you are not keeping up with the bare basics, then it makes it a lot more difficult for companies to access your value. You don't have the value. It's just you need to show up with that in some way. And face-to-face interviews are going by the wayside as well. Most of the companies that are in the top tier are using artificial intelligence to go through resumes. They'll actually use artificial intelligence to go find people that they want to place into their companies. So if you want to be found and you want to be known for a particular skill set or something that you're passionate about, you need to be out there putting your name in it. And if you're not comfortable writing, that's okay. Nobody cares.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, because I'm an English major and I can't stand it.
Julie, thanks again for coming on. And for the regular listeners, want to thank you for joining us as well. This has been the Gas, Glue, and Guardrails podcast. Like us and also give us that 5-star rating on your favorite podcast provider. Want to thank you for joining us. Hope you learned some things today. What you've gotten today is a masterclass checklist in whether you were that vulnerable boomer. It's okay, boomers. Is that what we say? No, that's an insult. I just insulted an entire generation. But it is okay to be a boomer. How is that? That much better. All right.
Perfect.
So whether you were a boomer, an Xer, all the way to a Zer, you've got some things you need to understand about the folks across the office from you and those people that you may not understand today, but you need to understand every day from here on out. Julie's giving you a checklist of things to think about, and I encourage you, listen for a second time to this show, listen to some of the wisdom she's passed on, and think about, for those leaders listening, what are those conversations I need to have with my team to figure out how we break down the barriers and get everybody on the same page when it comes to productivity and our processes and just understanding how we bring a lot of people from a lot of different generations together. Julie, thank you so much. This has been the Gas, Glue, and Guardrails podcast. I am Pete Havel. Ladies and gentlemen, go put out some fires.